Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
We're back. It's 12 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Jim. Hello.
It's good to have you back.
And, Thank you. Good to be back.
I know you want to join me in saying happy birthday to some organizations and some entities.
I'd be happy to.
This is, well, of course, now this is the day that the Magna Carta was signed by King John. Which, as you know, was a very important document. Really, I guess you could say the first document. King Henry II, prior to him, had kind of gotten the ball rolling, but by 1215, the Magna Carta became a document that really gave rise to future documents that gave us basically the English common law that our laws are based on.
Yes.
So that's a big day in history. Also, Arkansas, happy birthday to Arkansas, 1936. This is their birthday from the 25th state.
Mm-hmm.
So I know you're all on Twitter about that, aren't you?
I can hardly hear it.
IBM was incorporated on this day in 1911. This is a big day in history, Joan.
Wow.
IBM, one of our corporate partners. Happy birthday to IBM. And the Boy Scouts, 1916. The Boy Scouts were born on this day. How about that?
Wow.
By a bill signed by President Wilson. Did you know that Boy Scouts was actually created by a bill signed by the president?
I think I knew that, yeah.
I didn't know that until I started doing the show, but that's something a lot of people don't realize.
Oh, okay.
So anyway, a lot of birthdays going on there. And Joan, the letter is a lot of good stuff in the letter these days. You guys tackle the housing topic right out of the box, don't you?
That's right. And as usual, we have kind of an interesting turn of phrase. We ask what's ahead for the housing market. We say a cleansing is underway. I've never heard about the housing market being cleansed.
This riveting language that you use, Joan,
it
spins my head around. I mean, cleansing. Who would think of to use a word like that? Only Kiplinger, right?
Only us.
So what does that mean? But now that sounds like code for trouble.
Well, in a sense, but I mean, to me, it's code for some realism injected into the market, because we've had some excesses in certain markets, and certainly the market I'm in the Washington, D.C. area was guilty of that, with a lot of speculative overbuying, particularly of condos, you know, new condos, and too much building of condos.
What I think there's been too much of is reporting from inside of a handful of little market pockets around the country that were getting upside down the pricing, but reporting from those areas and extending that kind of coverage to the whole country. And so to me, the cleansing that needs to take place are all the people who have been predicting that we were going to have a housing bubble.
Alan Greenspan. You and I have talked about that many times, that our housing market really isn't one housing market. It's so many different regional ones.
It's like politics. It's all local.
Exactly, yeah.
So I personally have been one of the people who said, housing bubble, what housing bubble? And there have been some speculative investing bubbles. But, Joan, those are always with us.
Yes.
But I do think that there may be trouble in paradise with some of the financing elements that people have been taking advantage of, meaning that they borrow up to the hilt with equity loans and they go spend that money, and then interest rates go up on their adjustable rate mortgages, and I think that's an issue. But see, I don't see that as a housing problem. I see that as a consumer debt problem.
It's a financial services problem.
Exactly.
Right.
But very quickly when you shine a light on this housing bubble argument, the people who believe in that very quickly go over to what I just said, and they're two separate things in my opinion.
Oh, no question about it, because we're really talking about the construction industry.
Right. That's exactly right. The construction industry, and of course, it affects a lot. Whenever the housing industry does make adjustments, it affects a lot of industries, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. No question about it. Think about all the things that go into a house and the attendant expenses that revolve around it. They really have a big ripple effect.
Well, the professional services that are involved in building a house and acquiring a house.
Right.
And also the accessories that you ladies love to put in the house. And,
wait a minute.
I've already gone on notice recently that we're going to be accessorizing at my house, and so I'm already waiting on the other shoe to drop on that one. I have been told that I better not leave for too many days, because I might not recognize it when it comes back.
For your own good, yeah.
That's probably the truth. But you guys say that home builders are adjusting quickly to softer demand. Is there really softer demand out there, Joan?
Well, again, yeah, I think the answer is it depends. You know, maybe there is in certain places. And you know, in my area, they're talking about, well, you know, houses aren't being sold in 3 or 4 days. It's maybe taking 14 or 21. But to me, that's not softer demand.
But,
it's
Joan,
you
live in a wacky market.
Well, it was wacky when people were coming in with multiple bids on the first day that a house was
exactly.
on the market, sure.
Exactly. I mean, you live in a place where people would be sitting, you know, reared back watching Wheel of Fortune, and, you know, eating their dinner, and the knock on the door, and people walk up and say, "Would you sell your house to me?"
Yeah.
I mean, that's wacky.
Right.
I mean, you haven't even thought about selling. You don't want to sell it. And they say, you know, I'll give you $10,000-$20,000 more than it's worth.
And they don't go away until you agree to it.
Until you do something. Yeah, they almost hold you hostage. I mean, that's wacky. That's not happening across most of the country, though, Joan.
Right, exactly. That's the point we're making, sure.
Exactly. So, you know, the other thing, Joan, that I think is minimizing the housing bubble argument is the fact that unemployment continues to drop. What's it, like 4.6% now?
Yes.
That's like, the economists tell me that's essentially full employment.
Wow.
When people have jobs, that means that they can put some pressure on wages. And when people have jobs and their wages are going up, they can buy houses.
Right.
And the other thing, Joan, to remember, and this is very important, I think, that a lot of people don't take into consideration, and it's the generational wave effect. Hmm. Remember, the people who are starting to move up to the next houses are the Gen Xers, who are only about 50 million, but before too long, we're going to have Gen Ys.
That's true.
What they call the Echo Boomers. I mean, in the next 5 to 10 years. The early Gen Ys, which our generational expert says may wind up being as much as 100 million before they're through.
Wow.
Those guys are going to be buying houses. So I think it's good to be in the housing business these days. 20 after. Stay with us. We'll be right back with Joan Pride. Stay with us. Little Marvin Gaye for you. Classic remake of who made that before? I'm trying to remember.
It's before my time.
The Pips. What was her name?
Yeah, Gladys Knight?
Gladys Knight's what I'm trying to say. Gladys Knight and the Pips. Yeah, she made that first.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah,
and he covered it. Marvin covered that, yeah. You don't get that information everywhere, folks. The radio, the music stations don't give you this kind of information like DJs used to do.
And there may be a reason for that.
No, I think we're the worst for it. No,
okay.
That's right. I miss the old DJs. Hey, Joan, we're talking about housing. And, you know, I made the comment before we went to the break, it's a good time to be in the housing business. I don't mean at this very moment. There may be some housing, you know, builders out there. And by the way, that's a tough business.
Yeah.
You know, I've done some construction before. And it's a tough, tough business to be in. But not that any of it's easy, but it's tough to be in the housing industry. But I do think over time, over the next 20 years, there's going to be plenty of demand for housing. And especially for new stuff, I think. And so... I think long term it's not a bad industry to go into, because as I said, one of the most interesting things to do in the marketplace is to observe the generational waves.
Oh, yes.
And what those people are who are coming on and the ages that they're becoming. And just like Joan, as you've talked and I've talked about many times, the impact that the baby boomers are going to have on retirement.
Well, and that's the thing. The baby boomers have had big impacts on every age that they've hit, and there's a lot of speculation now as to what their retirement is going to be like.
Right.
And a lot of the guesses are that I think we're getting off the subject here, but they're kind of maybe won't be as comfortable as their parents might have been.
Well, I don't agree.
I don't
with
know
that.
If that's true. I'm just throwing.
I don't agree with that. And here's why.
Okay.
Our parents are leaving us more typically than their parents left them. They worked hard all their lives. They saved. They scrimped. They didn't spend a lot of money. I mean, how many GI generation of our GI generation parents had two homes? I think a lot of baby boomers are going to have two homes. They're going to have their main home, and they're going to have a resort home, a vacation home. And so I think that's and I don't think it's off the topic. I think you know this is all part of the construction industry, all part of the housing industry. But it's going to be interesting to see how that works out. And don't worry about the housing industry, folks. Don't believe all this bubble business. I've never believed that. John, yeah. Let's move over and talk about the economy. Foreign automakers. Now, you and I have warned about this in the past. Give us the headline on this one.
Okay.
Foreign automakers.
I didn't get my letter open there. I'm
foreign
sorry.
Automakers and the big three. How about that?
A foreign automaker will assume Big Three status. You might ask, how is that possible? Well,
how is that possible, Joe?
Well, we think Toyota is going to leapfrog over Daimler Chrysler in U.S. auto sales by the end of this year, and it's going to get close to Ford's market share
in the U.S. alone.
In the U.S. alone.
Yeah. Not never mind worldwide, just in the U.S.
Yeah, and well, I think Toyota is partly being driven by sales of its hybrids. They're very popular, and people are really snapping them up, I think.
Well, they also probably make a better car, too.
They probably do.
Or at least, let me put it this way, at least the public perceives it that way. And
yeah.
Now that we've had all the insourcing of manufacturing those automobiles on this continent, then there's not the stigma of buying a foreign car.
Right.
I mean, well, think about it, Joan. Where, you know, what is Chrysler? Chrysler is part of Daimler, which is a foreign company.
Right.
Right? It's mm-hmm. a German company. So what's the difference in buying Chrysler or Toyota?
Now, I don't and mean the big mantra used to be buy American, but I can buy a Honda in the United States because they have plants here. Toyota has plants here.
They all do.
Yeah, they all do.
Nissan does. Right. Mazda does. They all do. Mm-hmm. Hyundai is building one. Right now, and so, yeah. So it's not Honda, Hyundai, and so, you know, Joe, it's so interesting. We've talked about this before. So interesting to observe the parallel universes of automobile manufacturing in the United States. The foreign car companies have put manufacturing across the Southeast, primarily.
Yeah.
And they're competing straight up with the companies in the Rust Belt, the Detroit companies. And they're winning, and the reason they're winning is not just because their cars are better, but because they can compete better, because they don't have the baggage that Detroit has.
Right.
So that's very interesting, and that's one of the reasons why, Joan, that you know, I think bankruptcy is in the future. Bankruptcy or a major realignment is in the future of every single U.S. automobile manufacturer.
Gee.
Both. I mean, either or, both and. Could be both and. But you guys say that the U.S. brands are tanking.
Yes, we say tanking.
Yeah.
I mean, and we don't say that sales are falling through the floor, but our point is that market share, that all-important market share, is really shifting.
Right.
In a big way.
And you guys also said that they won't resort to discounts, but I thought I saw a big discount. I thought I saw Ford offering a big discount the other day.
I thought I did, too.
Yeah, so but the big discounts, they increased their volume, but they didn't increase their profits when they offered those big discounts last year, did they?
No, exactly.
You can't keep that going forever, folks. The cows come home to after a while on those. 29 after. We're going to be right back with Joan Pride. We're going to move over and talk of some other things like energy with regard to the economy. And also, what are we going to do with our pennies? Are we going to have pennies for very, very much longer? Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Named to Talkers Magazine's Heavy 100 for the third straight year.
We tell you over and over again that you're wonderful, and you just don't get it. What's wrong with you?
Congratulations, Jim Blassingame, our small business advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Mr. Wonderful is here, as always. That's what Joan Pride calls me, Mr. Wonderful. She does that all the time. Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Right, Joan?
If you say so.
Mr. Wonderful. That's what she says. Hey, Jim, how's Mr. Wonderful? That's what she always says.
Oh, boy.
Joan, my crack team of researchers has handed me this little piece of information. We were talking about the prices of the problems that the U.S. car companies are having to compete with the Japanese and other foreign companies. My crack team of researchers says that they found that the average cost for an employee at General Motors is $80 an hour with the burden and everything, the pension.
That's
burden.
Astounding.
$80 an hour. And the Japanese makers, the aggregate per hour is half, which is like $46, almost half, $46 an hour.
I just want to say you have a great research team.
They were able
to jump into that and do that so quickly.
It's a crack research team.
It's a pretty large team, too.
It's immense. The names just go on and on. The list goes on and on. But you know, think about that. And, you know, as you and I have talked about, and as I reported earlier in the week, the story that I've read is that for every car that General Motors sells, $1,500 of that car, the money they take in, has to go directly to health care alone for their employees and retirees, of which about 70 to 80% of their total heads that they count are retirees.
Gee.
And about 6 or 8,000 of them, I've forgotten how many, at least 6,000, maybe more, are part of the jobs bank, where they actually tell these people to go sit down and don't work, and they pay them anyway.
Wow.
General Motors does that. So, what's wrong with that picture, Joan?
Boy, plenty.
Moving on, Joan, to the energy issue. This is very interesting. And I haven't seen this anywhere else. You guys may be breaking this news, Joan. I don't know, but talk to us about how U.S. companies are having trouble tying down and bidding for oil reserves around the world. We got a lot of competition, don't we?
Well, there are some promising reserves, but the investor-owned firms are being outbid by state-owned foreign companies. And guess what country is running in and grabbing these?
Would that be China?
Maybe it would, yeah.
Yeah. So a company like ExxonMobil, for example, or a U.S. company, trying to go and bid in Angola for some of their reserves is being beaten by China.
Well, nobody has a deeper pocket than a government.
Right.
They can just print money if they need
more. That's exactly right.
So you can't, no matter how well financed you are as a private company, you can't compete.
Well, and so this is another reason why the U.S. needs to figure out a way to become self-sufficient.
Right.
And, you know, if we could somehow become self-sufficient with energy, and I'm talking about with innovation, folks, not cutting back.
Right.
We don't need to cut back because we've got an economy that needs to power itself. But we've got to come up with innovation, ways to power ourselves other than fossil fuel. The more we can, you know, if we were self-sufficient, Joan, we wouldn't care what was we wouldn't care what was happening in the Middle East. We'd have a lot less concern about what's going on over there.
That's right.
Because, I mean, sure. People say, well, the only reason we're in the Middle East is because of oil. Well, duh.
Yeah,
you know, it's in our interest to be involved in that. So anyway, that's something to think about. Just another thing to worry about, folks. If you didn't have enough already, Joan, what about pennies? Are we gonna stop having pennies? Are they gonna stop making pennies?
Well, no. Even though it really isn't cost efficient to have them around anymore, it costs more than a penny to make each penny. In fact, it costs like about a penny and a half. That's a lot.
Makes no sense, does it?
Yeah.
But what, you know, do you carry pennies around?
Well, not, I don't try to. But
I put them in a jar. When I take them home, I put them in a jar.
Yeah.
And then after a while, we take them to the bank or something. But I don't carry them around anymore if I don't have to, because you can't buy anything for a penny.
Well, that's true. It's just, if you get something in the store that's, you know, like $9.41, it's nice to give them a penny so you don't get four.
Joan, did you ever put, you remember the old soft drink machines where you put your coin in and pulled a handle down and a drink came out?
Yes.
Well, did you ever have one where it was a nickel and a penny where it was 6 cents? Did you ever see one of those?
I'm not that old.
When I was a kid, they were a nickel for like 100 years.
Really?
A soft drink was a nickel for 100 years. And then the price went up to 6 cents. And you literally put a nickel and a penny in, and you could get a soft drink.
Wow.
That was a long time ago, Joan.
I wouldn't tell too many people that.
Stand by. Quick break. We're going to take a quick one, and we'll be right back with Joan Pride. When we come back, we got more things for you to worry about, folks. The air traffic controllers are all a Twitter, and what's that going to mean to your air travel? And then we're going to talk about stocks after that. Stay with us. 2010.
You don't know.
Welcome back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I know you're all a Twitter about being part of our day. It's like a dream come true, right? That's how Joan Pride feels. She's just giddy about being on this show every week or so. And Joan, I'm always glad I can help you out by letting you do your gig with us every week. I'm such
by
a nice guy.
By lifting spirits once a week.
That's right. I mean, what would you be doing, Joan, if you weren't doing the show? I mean, think about it. Never mind. I don't think I want to know that. Never mind, Joan.
Let's try sleeping.
Kiplinger.com, KIPLINGER.com is the website that I always like telling folks about. It's a good one, folks, and I use it all the time. I encourage you to do that, and I encourage you to find out more about their publications, like the letter we write, we work off of every week, the Kiplinger letter, which is their flagship. Coming up on 83 years, Joan.
Wow.
In September, you guys are going to have an anniversary, aren't you? 1923.
Wow.
The company was founded, the letter.
Hard to believe.
And
yeah.
I know it was a two-pager. Now it's a four-pager. Comes out every week. And then they've got some other publications, the tax letter, the agriculture letter, and the California letter.
Yeah.
And then there's a magazine that you can buy on the newsstands, or you can order it by subscription the same way you order the letters. Joan, go ahead.
You bet. It's called Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
Lots of good stuff there for your investments, for the money you spend, the products you buy. Lots of good stuff there. Kiplinger.com, but there's also a phone number too, right, Joan?
You bet. Our toll-free number is 800-544-0155.
And don't forget to ask them for that Blasingame 30-day free trial. They'll give it to you for a little bit. Joan, the air traffic, you know, I still meet people who, when they find out that I travel a little bit, they say, oh, it must be so glamorous. And I say, you know, what are you, Rip Van Winkle or something?
Yeah.
You know, have you not been on traveling? There's nothing glamorous about air travel.
No.
And you guys say it make it worse. Say
right.
It
well,
so.
Think about it. Remember when President Reagan fired the air traffic controllers? What year was that?
That was 1981.
Well, and how long that was, like, let's do our math.
25.
25 years ago?
Yep.
Well, I forget how many years you have to have in as an air traffic controller, but it's not a lot, and a lot of those folks are eligible for retirement.
High-pressure job.
It's a very high-risk, high-stress job, and so they can accumulate their retirement credits very quickly. And so we're saying about 45% of the air traffic controllers will start heading for the exits in 2011, which would be, I guess, the 30th year. And it doesn't matter how old you are. You know, if you're only 50 years old in 2011, you can still go as long as you've got your 30 years in.
Right. Well, and you guys say that that's going to contribute to a problem with air traffic.
Well, right, because if you don't have controllers in place, you can't fly the plane.
Can't we hire new people, though, Joan?
Well, you can, but it takes a long time to train them.
It does. It sure does.
Oh, yeah.
But I will tell you this,
you
sir, John.
You can't just hire anybody either.
I'm going to soften your concern a little bit here.
Oh, thank you.
As you know, I'm a pilot. And in those days, I'm not flying. I haven't flown much in a while. But in those days, I was flying a lot. During the strike and during the firing and the bringing all the new people.
Right.
I was in the air quite a bit in those days, and flying all over the country and into some pretty big airports. And I remember literally you know, being in the air during the strike, during the, you know, a time when people thought, well, it's going to be more dangerous because we've got people not working and we've got people that are, you know, there's all this tension and everything. And I remember thinking, okay, I'm waiting for the reduction in service. I'm waiting for, for me not to be able to get what I need as I fly around. Never happened.
Huh.
It was never unsafe. It was never a time. There was never a time when I didn't get what I needed. Huh. And now, granted, there's more traffic now. Granted, there's more the airspace is a lot more complicated, especially since 911. Granted, there's a lot more stuff going on. Hopefully, they've got equipment to take care of that, technology to take care of that.
Right.
I don't think this is a concern.
Wow, that's very optimistic of you.
Well, I'm only basing that, Joan, on my experience.
Okay.
The experience I had 25 years ago.
Right, but then what, as you point out, it is 25 years ago.
It is. And so I actually am not worried about that. What I'm more worried about is civilian aviation. And this is off the letter, but I'm more worried about the cost of flying an airplane has gone through the roof because of litigators, of trial lawyers who've sued manufacturers for no reason, and the contingent liability that manufacturers have and the suppliers of product,
right.
of parts for that's what I'm more worried about than the traffic. I'm worried about the ability for all of us independent pilots and folks who want to fly to be able to fly and be able to afford it. That's what I'm more worried about.
Okay.
Anyway, that's my story, Joan, and I'm sticking to it. Talk to us you've got the stock market as your header here, Joan. But
yes.
This is really about Federal Reserve and inflation, isn't it?
Right. We're trying to reconcile what the Fed is doing and also what the stock market is doing. The Fed is doing everything it can to keep inflation down. The stock market is reacting very badly to it. And
you say overreacting.
We're saying it's overreacting. That they don't know that, you know, let's say Alan Greenspan was doing this, they wouldn't be as hyper as they are with Mr. Bernanke because they don't know him.
Yeah. Well, I think, Joan, and I'm no stock market expert. I tell the stock market guys, if they won't do small business, I won't do stocks. But but I believe that this is just one of the concerns that's making the people on Wall Street jittery. You know, we got global pressures. We've got lots of things going on. The price of gas, of petroleum. This is just one of those things that's making them jittery. And there are a lot of reasons for them to react, whether they're overreacting or not. I'll leave that up to you. I'll take your word for it. Tintil, we'll be right back. We're going to talk about e-business. What's something you are very much involved in? E-business, right after these messages. Stay with us.
Your troubles make me cry. Don't waste a moment.
We're back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. Don't forget to check out my site, please, and subscribe to my free newsletter, subscribe to my blog. Either one of those are available. Both of them are available to you. We'll send you the newsletter by email. We'll send you the blog by Real Simple Syndication, the technology which you can get on my site if you don't have it already. It works like a charm. Or you can just come and get it and check out all the things that we have there, including the archives, including all those past archives of my visits with Joan Pride. Those are just like little jewels. You're going to want to go back and listen to those. Right, Joan? I know you go back and listen to them all the time.
Right.
E-business, Joan, data security worries are dimming the outlook for online banking. What are you talking about?
Well, we're saying that growth in online banking is really going to slow because people are worried about identity theft, about their personal data being stolen by hackers.
I don't know if growth in online banking is going to slow, but I do know that the second part of what you said is true. They are worried about that. In fact, Joan, I've been doing a little bit of work in the last few months, some extra work and involvement with online security, and some of the research I've seen is that people feel much more likely they're three times more likely to feel that they're going to be a victim of cybercrime than they are of a physical crime. Now, that doesn't mean that there's a basis for that. In other words, it doesn't mean that that's what's happened. It just means that that's how what they believe.
Yeah. Wow.
And as you know, what perception is everything, right?
Oh, absolutely.
So I don't know. I believe that online banking and online doing business online, Joan, is going to become like driving a car. When you drive a car, when you get on public transportation, or when you walk across the street, you're taking your life in your own hands, right? But you do it anyway.
Right.
Because, I mean, you're sitting in a cafe reading an article about a pedestrian that just got wiped out in a cafe, in a city across town. Yet you still sit there in that street-side cafe and read the paper. You know, so people know that they could lose their identity. They could have some privacy lost if they do online business. But they're going to do it anyway, like they drive a car, because people, you know, we lose, 42,000 people a year die in car accidents?
Really?
Yeah. Jeez. It's about that many. So about 10% of how many die of lung cancer, by the way. But anyway, it's just, you know, one of those things that we're going to have to deal with. And what has to happen, Joan, is that all businesses have, not just the big companies, all of us have to become more diligent, because cybercrime, Joan, is becoming big business.
It sounds like it is.
$65 billion dollars last year. $65 billion industry.
Wow.
And see, it's not just the little hackers, the little pimple-faced hackers that are, you know, are trying to break in and who are just trying to have some fun. It's organized crime, and it's overseas too.
Gee.
And it's coming at you a lot of different ways. We all have to be. And Joan, you know what? Not only the companies who have our information, but as consumers, we have to be more diligent. We have to be smarter about not accepting the phishing and the farming and the
right.
All the different things that come into us.
Mm-hmm.
I get things, Joan, that are so compelling. You probably do too. That, I mean, I know about these things, and I get them, and I have to read them to make sure they're not real. Some of the probes that we get.
Absolutely.
But you guys do point out that there is a consumer faith is dropping a little bit, Joan, from 2003 to 2005.
Well, that's part of the problem, but you know, internet shopping is still going well.
Yep. Joan, what about e-books? Are e-books going to take over the print versions?
Well, we're saying not yet. We're saying it's going to take, oh gosh, a good 20 years, I guess. Because we're saying by the end of the decade, which would be, 4 years from now,
right,
there'll be 10% of the market.
Joan, I think it's going to take a long time, because my generation and the one that you're the baby, the very tail end of, we're going to have to die before that happens, I think.
I think so.
I still want to hold things in my hand that I can turn the page on, don't you?
Well, don't you think it's easier to read something on a piece of paper than on a screen?
Absolutely.
Much less a small screen.
Right. But I think there are other issues involved in that when that happens too, Joan. There'll be some other things going on. Hey, Joan, thank you for being here. Good job today, as
always.
Thank
you, Jim.
We'll see you next week.
Sounds good.
Joan Pride, the long-suffering Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, and our good friend. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.